Robin Bone calls London, Ontario home, and so does Pam Colleen, nutritional consultant. How are you, Pam?
I'm great, Tom. How are you today?
I'm excellent. I was just saying, I'm watching this World University Games, and because for the first time, I'm following a friend's child on Twitter. So my friend Jamie Bone, his daughter is this high-ranking pole vaulter who goes to Western, and she's halfway around the world. And the amazing thing is now I can watch this halfway around the world thanks to technology. So it's amazing, amazing what you're able to do in today's world. But I wanted to talk to you about a couple of things. One, there was an interesting story this week. We'll get to paleo diets. I think that'll take up more of our conversation. Because paleo or low carbohydrate diets are great for losing weight, but now we're seeing a lot of athletes turn to them, and the people we think, you know, carbo loading. Oh, I got to get my carbs, and those people are like, no, you know what? Actually, low carbs is better for me. But this notion about water, and it was in a news story this week that if you want to lose weight, those who drink more water lose more weight. But should we be concerned about how much water we drink? I know in the summer everyone focuses on, make sure you get enough water. Make sure you have plenty of water. But here's something interesting about, as part of a weight loss strategy, water consumption is key in that as well.
I'm really very dubious of that kind of claim. There's so much more to weight loss than drinking lots of water. And on top of that, of course, excess water consumption can actually be very damaging for your kidneys. And very few people actually know this information, Tom. This is kind of like top secret because so
All
many
right.
people out there
Should
hear
we write
every
it down?
Day.
Should we write this down?
It's top secret.
Yes.
Yeah. Going to explode after we talk about it. But, you know, it was years ago I had an interview. I met with Dr. Bill Clark here in London, Ontario, and he's a nephrologist, a kidney specialist, and he worked on the Walkerton case. And just by accident, Tom, he found out that people who were drinking too much water actually had been damaging their kidneys. And so the solution to the problem was to drink less water. But these people were drinking copious quantities of water, exaggerated quantities of water in the name of good health. You see, they were drinking all this water because they believed it to be very healthy, just like the article that you're reading. You know, in that article that you're reading, you know, they're recommending anywhere between 2 liters for women and 3 liters for men per day. And this is just way too much water in terms of what it can do in terms of damaging the kidneys. So, you know, I think that what happened many, many years ago is some research was published from, I think, the National Institutes of Health, NIH, down in the United States. And what they concluded was that, you know, people should be drinking the about 64 ounces of water per day. And what happened with that information is it got distorted over the years because the bottled water industry could make a lot of money by saying, you know, drink more water. So this notion, this first mantra that we started hearing about drinking 8 ounces of water per day was based on this NIH research. And then what happened was, of course, is they had distorted the research. And the research actually said that we should be consuming about 64 ounces of water per day, but that included the water that we find in many, many foods that we're eating in the day as well.
So that was the total water, which included anything you have in the morning, even with food. A lot of water we get out of our food, but also if you drink something other than water, well, most of that's water anyways, that most people weren't counting that.
That's right. And so essentially what Dr. Clark and I discussed, and he believes this is more practical, is that, say, an average adult should probably consume more like about, you know, 4, maybe 6 glasses of water a day. It's going to depend on your activity level, of course. It's going to depend on your size, your weight. It's going to depend on many, many variables. So do not etch what I say in stone because it's going to vary from individual to individual.
But about half of what we commonly think of.
Absolutely. Like a lot of these recommendations are just, they're not based on sound science. And I think I sent you the article that where they cite Dr. Clark and his concerns over this issue as a kidney specialist, right? And it was just by accident, Tom, that he found this information out. And look at how many people, I look around me and I see how many people are out there drinking huge amounts of water in the name of health. And I have to say, I have to keep my mouth shut because, you know, I don't think they're going to believe me because it's just so profound. You know, this information is just so incredibly pervasive that so many people believe that huge amounts of water are healthy, and it's really actually very counterproductive.
I guess because maybe it's in our thinking that because we are so much water, the body is composed of so much water, and we have the thinking that water is a necessary condition for life, and it's so inert but so beneficial. It's not like you're choking down hydrogen peroxide. I mean, it's water. I mean, it's tasteless, it's colorless, it's odorless. Every cell needs it. It's one of the conditions we need for life on this earth. How can more not be better? But it turns out, yeah, more is not better.
That's right. And other things will happen, you see, because if you drink too much water, you could actually risk throwing off your mineral balance as well. And that can actually cause things like constipation. Because if you're flushing out all sorts of potassium from your body, you need potassium for a good evacuation. And so and most people would just, you know, their heads are going to spin when they hear this information. But I've seen it. I've seen where people are drinking huge amounts of water and they're just not eliminating properly. And that, because they've really just thrown off their mineral balance. And this is not what we're supposed to be. This is not the result we're supposed to be getting, but that's what can happen.
The other thing is, all right, so people shouldn't be drinking so much water, but we see a lot in the summertime as well. People want to rehydrate, so they think, you know what I need? Because I'm losing salts and I'm losing electrolytes, I'll use a sports drink then. Then I'll just drink a lot of a sports drink and I should be fine.
No, just drink water. Just drink water.
All right, drink water to rehydrate, and even a sports drink is not probably necessary.
Oh, don't drink the sports drinks. The mineral balance in these sports drinks is actually counter to our mineral balance, so it's going to be very counterproductive. So stay away from all of those electrolyte drinks and sports drinks and so on. Just stay away from them. Just drink plain old water. And I'm an athlete. Like, I play tennis. I played last night. It was really, really hot last night playing tennis. I bring a bottle of plain water with me when I play tennis, and I hydrate accordingly. These sports drinks are actually not healthy, even though they're claiming to be healthy. They're not healthy.
Now, this next article I want to get to, and I'll just touch on it briefly before we take a break, is paleo diets, or the Paleolithic diet, which really is almost, you know, thinking about what the caveman ate, has really become popular among people who are looking to lose weight, for instance, to lose a lot of excessive weight. If you're obese, you know, you can buy low carbs. We've seen great success from Atkins and other diets on low carbs, but paleo seems to take it a step further. But what's surprising to me is not just people wanting to lose weight. Elite athletes are turning to it, and the surprising elite athletes who turn to it, you'd think, well, if you're a wrestler or a weightlifter, guys who need massive amounts of muscle, these are the guys. No, endurance athletes, the ones we classically think of need to carbo load, or we've been told should carbo load, they're the people who are finding success with a paleo diet. They're the ones who are like, yeah, I should eat probably more fats and more proteins. The carbs are not the way to go.
Mm-hmm.
Are you surprised?
I work with some professional athletes, and you know, they've been doing this high carb, low fat diet. You know, they've been taking protein powders. They've been making themselves sicker and sicker and sicker. And then they land on my doorstep, and I have to fix them. It's like, okay, how do we undo this damage from a diet that is diametrically opposed to our ancestral diet? What happens when we have fallen into this trap of eating this high carb, low fat diet, or a high protein, low fat diet? Is it puts tons of stress on our liver, on our digestive system, you know, not to mention the fact that we're starving our brains on these kinds of diets. So what happens, Tom, is you see a lot of the critics out there saying the paleo diet doesn't work, that it's bad, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, these critics really don't understand some fundamental historical nutritional principles. We all evolved on a high-fat, low-carb diet. Right? This fat phobia started after World War II predominantly. And then we started following fad diets where there is no historical precedence whatsoever. And in the 1970s, things got really, really bad in terms of, you know, fad dieting. So since about the 1970s, we've seen more and more physical and mental degeneration. And what I also see is the damage that these diets do to the digestive system. So for many, many decades now, we have been damaging our digestion. And what happens when people go to the true diet, to their ancestral diet, is that they've damaged their digestion so much that they can't handle these foods. They can't digest these foods. And Tom, that's where the big mystery lies, where people are transitioning to a paleo or an ancestral diet, and it doesn't feel right in their bellies. or they react negatively to these foods. It's not the fault of the foods. It's the fault of the fact that the digestion has become so impaired that they can't. The body has essentially forgotten how to digest even their ancestral foods.
Pam Colleen, nutritional consultant, joining us on the program. We'll talk a little bit more about paleo diets and what exactly that means. And it's not just, but when you see high-performance athletes, especially endurance athletes, switch over from a carbo-intensive diet to one that is focused and getting the majority of their calories from fat, it makes you stand up or makes you sit up and take notice. So we'll continue this conversation with Pam after the break. It's 11:17 here on News Talk 610 CKTB.
You're listening to Tom McConnell on News Talk 610 CKTB and online at 610CKTB.com.
22 minutes after 11 o'clock, this is News Talk 610 CKTB. We're talking to Pam Colleen, and we're talking about a paleo diet, which is short for Paleolithic, and often goes by the term caveman diet. What did our ancestry eat? Not just our ancestors in terms of, 200 years ago, Grandpa came over from Scotland or England. No. Thousands of years ago, before the agricultural revolution, what did our ancestors eat? What's interesting is endurance athletes, including super endurance athletes. The example, Timothy Olsen won a 100-mile foot race through the high Sierras in record time on a high-fat diet. And someone said he's so skinny it looks like he can take a shower in a shotgun barrel. But he's hooked up to his body's fat stores, which would be 30,000 calories if he needs it. I mean, we have enough fat on our body to sustain ourselves. We don't need to be loading any more in through carb intake. As well, by having low carb intake, it counteracts the effects of aging. The body responds by producing a fuel source from fat called ketone bodies, which have anti-inflammatory properties that combat oxidative stress. Wow, Pam, there's more to it than just burning calories.
It's huge. I mean, the benefits are absolutely huge if people can actually put themselves into that state of ketosis, which essentially happens when your carb intake is about 30 grams or perhaps less. I take a more moderate stance when I work with my clients. I usually ask people to eat about 72 grams of carbs per day.
But that's still a huge reduction from probably what
huge,
they were
eating. Huge reduction compared to, I mean, a lot of people on a daily basis here in North America are consuming anywhere from 200 to 300 grams of carbs per day. That's not unusual. But that is going to put people on a hormonal downslide, right? This is what is going to damage the body in terms of the health of the brain, the health of the hormones, your overall physical and mental health. I mean, this is not natural or normal for the human body to consume that many carbohydrates. We just simply did not evolve adapting to this high quantity of carbs in the diet. You mentioned the agricultural revolution. You know, back in that actually happened 10,000 years ago when agriculture was first invented. Before agriculture, of course, we wouldn't have eaten a lot of carbs. I mean, I always like to tease my audience and say, listen, I know the last ice age ended 12,500 years ago. Did we have greenhouses back then? I mean, it's ridiculous for us to think that we can tolerate eating that many carbohydrates in a day. We're just not adapted to it.
How, when we talk about a Paleolithic diet, what is included for people, just to give them a thumbnail sketch, what's included and what's generally excluded? I know you're less stringent than being super low carbs, but generally what do you allow or what should you be eating?
Well, I do have clients who follow a very low-carb diet, and they do very, very well, by the way, but it takes some adaptation simply because of the fact that the body has to be reminded how to digest these foods, right? So it can take months for some people to adapt to a ketogenic diet. It's not going to happen overnight, but when people take the time and the patience to do it, it works out beautifully. People lose weight, they feel great, their cognition is sharper, etc. But what they eat typically in the day would be sort of a bacon and egg style breakfast. And if I say meat and potato, I'm talking about not potatoes literally. Some of these people who are following a more pure ketogenic diet, they wouldn't eat potatoes because it's high in starch. I'm not anti-potato, but what they would do is they would choose vegetables that are less starchy. So they might cook up maybe some
cabbage?
cauliflower or broccoli, okay, or something along that line. And of course, on the cooked vegetables, they would add more butter. So they're eating a lot of fat. The emphasis is on eating huge amounts of fat throughout the day. And that's essentially what our bodies evolved on. But again, I want your audience to remember that because we have forgotten how to digest these foods, essentially, that you may have some difficulty in the beginning phases of turning towards a more paleo or ketogenic diet. So
even if I have a fairly good mixed diet now, and I look at myself, and other than being a non-fruitivore, I have a fairly decent mixed diet, and I certainly put a little more emphasis on listening to you, my fat intake. You know, I'm not egg averse. I'm not butter adverse. I have no problem with fats.
And you make a great gravy.
I make a terrific gravy. Don't ever forget that. Terrific gravy. But, so if I just cut down the grains and replace those calories with more fat-centric or protein-centric foods, would I have difficulty with digestion? Or it's because it's a lot of calories to make up? So
no, I would say, here's what I notice with my clients. Anybody who's ever been a strict vegetarian or vegan, they're going to have the toughest time, okay? If you've always eaten somewhat of a mixed diet, Tom, you would probably transition far more easily than people who've been either vegetarian, vegan, or even near vegetarian. Because you have to realize, a lot of us here in North America are following a near vegetarian diet.
We'll only go for chicken or fish or something very, very lean.
Well, if you think about the typical diet of a North American, they'll wake up in the morning and they might have a bagel or a box of some box cereal with a little bit of milk, and that milk is probably low fat, okay? And they might have a glass of orange juice with it. So there's hardly any fat in that breakfast, hardly any protein, good quality protein, that is. And the same thing goes for lunch. If you look at the typical lunch, people are having bread with a tiny piece of meat in there, right, with their sandwich. They might have a more real or traditional meal at dinner, but essentially they've been starving their brains for breakfast and lunch for most people here in North America. So they're near vegetarian. They don't realize that that's what they're doing to their bodies and their brains, but that's what most people are doing. So they're also compromising their digestion because, you know, they're not getting enough fat to remind the body how to digest the fat.
One of the problems is, and I'll leave it on this note, we are carbivores, and that's where we have to stop. We have to go back to being more carnivore than carbivore.
You bet. You bet. That's a good way to put it. Absolutely.
Always a pleasure, Pam. Take care.
You too. Thanks, Tom.
Pam Colleen, bye-bye. If you want more information, her website, pamcolleen.com, PAMKILLEEN, pamcolleen.com, in terms of more information on what she espouses.